From WGCU News, this is Gulf Coast Live. Florida lawmakers, by and large, haven't warmed to the idea of expanding Medicaid through the Affordable Care Act. Although the federal government has pledged to fully fund the expansion for the first 3 years and provide a total of $51 billion over 10 years, some lawmakers have expressed concerns that it could still end up leaving a heavy financial burden on state tax dollars. Now U.S. Senator Bill Nelson is touting an alternative funding model that would use local rather than state tax dollars to fund the state's portion of the expansion. We'll take a closer look at how that plan would work. Plus, as the disease greening continues to ravage citrus groves, growers are increasingly looking to alternative crops. We'll learn more about two of those alternatives as we explore Florida's peach and olive industries. First, this news. Welcome back to Gulf Coast Live. I'm John Davis. Thanks for joining us. The term Florida agriculture typically brings to mind the state's $9 billion a year citrus industry, or the myriad vegetable varieties that make up the bulk of the nation's domestic produce in the winter months. And although citrus is practically synonymous with Florida, the industry is facing a crisis due to the devastating effects of the bacterial disease citrus greening. Dubbed greening due to the green-colored, bitter, and misshapen fruit that falls from affected trees, the disease has taken millions of citrus plants and threatens to spread throughout the U.S. The federal farm bill passed in February includes $125 million to continue research efforts into fighting the disease. Even still, citrus growers are increasingly hedging their bets on alternative crops. Two of those alternatives may be a bit of a surprise. Although they're more commonly associated with Georgia, an estimated 800 to 1,200 acres of peach trees have already been planted in Florida. Researchers have also looked into the viability of an olive industry here in Florida, which is currently home to an estimated 200 acres of olive groves. Joining me now for a closer look at growing these crops in Florida is Dr. Mercy Olmsted. She's a professor with the University of Florida's Horticultural Sciences Department and has researched intensively into the viability of growing peaches in Florida. Dr. Olmsted, welcome to Gulf Coast Live.
Thank you, John, so much.
Also with us is founder and president of the nonprofit agricultural advocacy organization, the Florida Olive Council, Michael O'Hara Garcia. Prior to starting the council, he worked with Cisco Systems, leading the company's response to Hurricane Katrina. Garcia has also served as senior technology advisor for the U.S. House of Representatives Government Reform Committee, Subcommittee on Criminal Justice. His experience also includes work with the U.S. Department of Commerce's Minority Business Development Agency and the U.S. Information Agency, among others. Michael Garcia, welcome to the show.
Thank you, John. Good to be here.
I invite our listeners to join the conversation as well. Phone lines are open at 1-877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. Send email to gulfcoastlive@wgcu.org or post your comments and questions on our Facebook page at WGCU Public Media. And Mercy Olmsted, let's start with you. When we think of peaches, we often think of growing regions north of Florida, like Georgia or South Carolina, where the climate's a bit cooler. I know in order to bear fruit, don't peach trees need a certain number of chill hours that we typically don't see in Florida's citrus growing regions?
The University of Florida has spent the past 50 years doing breeding for low-chill peaches, and they've specifically targeted peaches and germplasm that will bear fruit in this low chill chill climate. And so we've got a number of varieties that work well and set fruit in the subtropical heat.
And how does the quality of these peach varieties grown in Florida compare to those grown in growing regions north of the state?
Well, I must admit I'm biased, but they're really great. They have a wonderful volatile characteristic because we know that consumers, when they buy peaches, they pick them up, they squeeze them a little bit, and they smell them. And the first thing that is noticeable about Florida peaches is that they smell great. We have been, as an industry, marketing these fruit as tree ripe, and because of unique characteristics in our peaches, we're able to keep them on the tree longer to develop those great smells and flavors.
And how extensively throughout Florida are peaches grown commercially? Or I say could be grown commercially. Do you see a lot of potential growth as well?
Yes, there was a study done by AFTAX and a marketing organization for the state that at the end of 2008, they said the industry could handle probably about 10,000 acres provided the fruit was distributed up and down the East Coast. And there have been, I've talked to a number of buyers that are really excited about Florida peaches, and there's certainly room to expand. Most of the acreage is around the Orlando area to the south, but the acreage that before in the 1980s was centered in North Florida, but because of the frost risk, a lot of the acreage has moved to the south.
And as citrus growers continue to experience losses from greening, do you or other experts with the University of Florida get inquiries from growers looking to diversify with peaches?
Yes. In fact, I would say probably 90% of the peach growers that I work with are citrus growers and are really looking for something that they can put into their existing agricultural infrastructure. And the trees work well. If you were to put blueberries in or strawberries, you would have to shift how, spacing and irrigation. And the peach trees fit nicely into the citrus grove system.
All right. Tell us about the research you conducted along with Kim Morgan from Virginia Tech about the profitability of growing peaches in Florida. What did you find?
Well, we were able to work with growers over a couple of years. We did a number of surveys, met with growers around the state, drove around, and tried to get a good handle on what it would cost to establish a peach orchard and then also to maintain it through the life and see what the profitability of it would be. And, yeah, peaches are precocious compared to other tree fruit crops like apples or cherries, and so we can have a yield in year two. And so that's really attractive to somebody who's looking to diversify and get income right away. So probably by year four, they're able to get a profit of about $4,500 an acre, depending upon the input costs and the amount of sprays and their access to labor.
So compared to citrus, that's kind of seeing a profit faster than you would just, starting from nothing, isn't it?
Yes. Now, that's not taken into consideration. That's just a yearly profit. Mm-hmm. The amount of time that it would take to recoup your input cost would probably be about year six.
Okay. Okay. And again, you went around and spoke with growers who are actually already commercially growing peaches in the state. I guess, how big do you think this industry could get? Do we see Florida peaches on, produce store shelves outside of Florida yet?
We do. They have been in stores in the Atlanta area and in Louisiana. There have test marketed the peaches in Wegmans up in the Northeast, and they've been received very well. But right now, there's still Chilean peaches on the market, and so the local aspect of it is really being successfully marketed. So we're hoping to, as the industry grows, to get out there and really market the tree-ripe aspect of it to compete with the tail end of the Chilean peach market.
And I understand that, due to the time of year of Florida's growing season, Florida peach growers have a bit of an advantage. They can get a premium price for their crop compared to growers in other states.
Yes, they can. Approximately 1.5 times more, and certainly it's caught the attention of growers in other states. But it's simply a marketing window advantage that Florida has.
And for a grower in the Grove, what are some of the considerations that they might need to look at? And by that, I'm thinking, I've read that peaches can be a bit more labor-intensive than growing citrus in some ways. They require more regular pruning throughout the growing season. Are these important things to consider? Cost of labor.
Certainly. Yes, if you have a labor force in place, it is a little bit easier to get them there and train them and have somebody there ready to go. Our peach varieties, compared to other places in the country, don't set fruit uniformly. And so we often have to go through two or three times to thin fruit. And that, of course, every time you put a crew into the orchard, lends to the increased cost per acre or per pound. And so there is quite a learning curve with transitioning from citrus to peaches, but a lot of people, most of the guys I've talked to have been, it's taken just about 1 year, and then the next year they get it and they're ready to go.
And has the peach industry in Florida grown large enough yet for the National Agriculture Statistics Service to begin tracking annual numbers?
They would if they're going to start doing that again. With the earmarks removed on the national level and the severe budget reduction of the sequestration, they cut a lot of the specialty crop statistics. They were just focusing on grain. And so now I've started to see sweet cherry estimates again, and the guys at NAS are on my list to contact.
Okay.
Yes, I think we would certainly be in the, I think it has to be the top 95% of acreage in the United States, and I think we're there.
Okay, so that's been a funding issue, not so much a size of the industry issue. Okay.
Yes, in the past it was the size of the industry issue, but once we hit that threshold, it was a funding issue on the national level.
Gotcha. And of course, concerns about pests or disease are paramount. What do growers need to consider when it comes to peaches?
Yes, both of those are a challenge. We certainly, we don't have as many issues with rot, with brown rot, as they do in the northern locations, because we harvest our peaches so early, and we typically harvest them during the dry spring. In areas to the north where they have to keep the fruit on the tree because they bloom later, they have longer developmental periods from bloom, from fruit set to harvest, they run into problems with brown rot, and they end up putting sprays for that. For us, since we do it in the dry season, we minimize the number of sprays that we put out for fungal diseases. But we do have to stay on top, at least in South Florida, on things like fruit fly. So Caribbean fruit fly can be an issue, and growers manage for that.
We're taking a closer look at growing peaches and olives in Florida. Citrus growers are increasingly looking to alternatives due to losses from citrus greening. You can join the conversation with your comments and questions by calling 1-877-428-8255. That's 1-877-GCU-TALK. Send email to gulfcoastlive@wgcu.org or post your comments and questions on our Facebook page at WGCU Public Media. And let's turn now to growing olives in Florida. Michael Garcia, founder and president of the Florida Olive Council. In terms of acreage of commercially grown olives, how large is that industry now here in the state?
It's only beginning now. I think it's good to emphasize that our ambition is to do a lot of research. We're very early on in the process. Certainly, we're not been around 50 years. Actually, olives have been grown in Florida since the 1700s. But we're only beginning to embark on a commercial. There's one commercial olive a grove in North Florida, a very small grove, and it's been making olives and olive oil up there for about 10 years. And there are two commercial groves now in Florida, what we call super high density groves, where an ordinary grove may have 100 or 150 trees an acre. These high-density, super-high-density groves can have up to 650 trees per acre. And they are cultivated into hedgerows and then harvested that way. So I guess I should emphasize that the commercial aspects of olive oil and Florida olives is only just beginning. And at the Florida Olive Council, we're focused on getting the kind of research out there so that we can make some determinations about the best varieties and so forth.
Mm-hmm. And do you hear much from citrus growers or other growers looking to diversify and get into growing olives? Is there much of an interest now or again, looking to build that interest?
No, there's been a significant interest in it. I've been working for the last 3 years with the Florida Citrus Mutual folks who have really taken a leadership in working with the greening disease and so forth. Michael Sparks, who's with the Florida Citrus Mutual, is executive director down there, and he's really taken a leadership role. And I've worked with him, and he's encouraged me to talk to citrus growers about olives, which I've done. And there are a number of citrus growers that have small olive plots going on around the state. Likes Brothers has a small plot over by Camp Mack in Lake Wales. And we have several others that are, I can't mention right now the names, but they are beginning to put in small research plots to determine if the olives are going to be viable. One of the big issues with olives, like peaches and so forth is the chilling factor.
Yes.
And that's our most concern. And different varieties of olives respond differently and require different chilling. But generally, you want to have 150 to 300 hours of chilling is recommended. In North Florida, where we have a long-term olive grove up there around Mariana in Jackson County, they have around 400 hours of chilling. Now, there is a commercial olive grove that has been producing olive oil for 2 years now. They're in their second year of production, and that's up in Lakeland, Georgia, and that's about 30 miles north of Jasper, Florida. And the Shaw brothers up there have just installed an olive mill. It's the first olive mill that we have in the region. So they're actually actively growing olives. They have about a four-year-old plot up there. They have about 50 acres that they farm, and then there's another 200 or 300 acres around them that they service.
And do we, again, we, you know, you were talking about how we need more research into this, but I mean, have we identified varieties of olives that do tend to do better than others in Florida's climate? I understand, you know, they really developed in the Mediterranean and sort of a more arid regions as opposed to the humidity here. Is that a concern or a factor?
It is to some degree. Olives primarily are winter rainfall crops, where we have a lot of summer rainfall in Florida. So that's one of the issues. However, there are olive varieties, particularly the Arbequina variety, which was developed by the Spanish and is used quite extensively as an oil. In fact, probably most of the olive oil that is consumed is in the United States is based on the Arbequina olive. It's a very, very big production in Spain and around the world. And that, we found, has been a very resilient and a very good variety. We have right now, the Florida Olive Council has about 30 different varieties that we are trialing in various trials around the state, and we're going to add a few more varieties to that next year. And the Arbequina, like I say, is primarily the one that we've seen that's had very good results. Koroniki is another variety that has been done very well. And we're trying some newer varieties now that seem to be very precocious. In other words, they begin to set fruit very early. And these include Grignon, which is one of the ones that we're looking at very closely, and another Tunisian variety called Chimlali, which seems to have a lot of the attributes that we like. So, again, you know, emphasizing this is not an overnight a lot of people call up and they say, gee, we want to plant olives and blah, 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 and we're selling olive oil for $45 a gallon and so forth. Well, I think at this point we really need to be cautious. We need to begin this research program, which we've done, and begin to take a look at various varieties to see how they're going to do in different areas of the state. You have different chill. You have some microclimates around the state, which you have to pay attention to. But I would say overall there's been a tremendous reception. People have been very, very receptive, and we're providing plants to various people for the test sites and so forth, and we've had a good response.
And of the commercial olive operations that we do have in the state right now, are they primarily producing olives for processing into olive oil or table olives or both?
Well, the small operation up in North Florida makes olive oil and olives. It's a small traditional small farm operation where they harvest and brine olives and then press olives with a very rudimentary press. There are two, there are two larger operations. These are 20-plus acre. One is 30 acre, one is 20 acre. And these are super high-density operations, and that's where we were saying earlier, this is around 600 trees an acre, and they should be coming online. They should be having their first bloom set this year. The first bloom set is not going to be great, but nevertheless, it's going to kind of be an indicator of how we're doing. And all those groves have the traditional Arbequina, Arbasana, Koroniki mix, whereas about 90% of the trees are Arbequina, and then the Koroniki and the Arbasana are used for pollination. I think it's important for people to know that you just can't take an olive tree. Number one, you can't eat olives directly off the tree. Okay, they are not unlike peaches and some others. They need to be processed. So they and they're alternate bearing. similar to other fruits. So one year you may get a bumper crop, and the next year you don't get as many. So, but nevertheless, the good thing about olives, and that we're very interested in, and of course the economics of it are very, very important. 98% of the olive oil we consume in the United States, we consume about 80 to 90 million gallons a year. 98% of that is imported. Most of it is imported from Italy. And there have been some issues. The University of California, Davis, has done a study recently about adulteration in olive oil and so forth. And we're engaged with the International Trade Commission and others in Washington trying to address those issues to, for the benefit of the domestic growers. So the market is there. There's plenty of market. And one thing about olive oil is, unlike fresh fruit, you can store olive oil, similar to what they did with orange juice when they began making concentrate. So it allows you to have more of a spread of the market period, the market timing. So I think that that's one of the economic drivers. It costs about $5,000 an acre to install a super high-density grove, roughly, and then another $1,500 or so per year for the first couple, 3 years, because that's the intensive pruning times and so forth. And you need about 100 acres of olives overall to be able to justify a mill and the harvesting equipment. Of course, now we're going to be sharing those things and as we build the industry here.
Yeah, I understand you've been looking to establish a mill through work with the Florida Olive Council near the University of Florida in Gainesville for research. Tell us about that effort and what you hope that will do.
Well, what we're trying to do is to, we're trying to, I've been in Washington and talking to some of the people, the Department of Agriculture up there, and we're trying to get a small mill here. In fact, I'm meeting with some people from Italy that manufacture a mill, and we're going to have some early discussions. Basically, it's a situation where we're going to attract 50% of the money from private folks. These are large agricultural interests in Florida. And then we hope to get a grant for the other half. It's not a huge amount of money. A mill, a half-ton mill, is probably in the $100,000 range by the time that you put in the mill. You have to put in three-phase power and some other things. So that's moving along. We hope to have that happening probably next year. That's our goal, is to have that mill up and running next year, so that when we have some of these local groves around the Gainesville area, North Florida, Live Oak is another place where they have several of these, one big super high density, 30-acre super high density grove. Jonathan Carter, who's a grower up there in Live Oak, has a large grove of super high density olives. And then there are several other folks up there, the Jacksons and so forth, that have some olives, smaller acreage. So we're hoping to be able to do that next year through a 50-50 grant split.
And real briefly, just because we're coming up to the end of the hour here, I was very curious about your personal background. You know, your more recent experience centers on technology and communication with Cisco Systems and the federal government agencies. What prompted you to start the Florida Olive Council?
My wife asked me that same question. No, I retired, and I had been, and part of my career in the government, I worked in the Foreign Service. And I'd been in Israel and traveled around that region and noted that the, and lived over there. I lived in Egypt, the Sinai, for a year. And noted that, you know, there were olives over there. And I said, gee, this is a lot like Florida weather. I wonder why. And I began to look into this back in 2006, actually before I retired from Cisco. And I don't know. It just, I just got, you know, fascinated by it. And kept asking myself, why can't we do this? And then I found a few other people around Florida who had been growing olives. Don Mueller, as I said, up in North Florida, has been growing up there for about 10 years, 12 years. And so I just got interested in it. I don't know. I can't tell you much more than that. And when I have an interest in something, I sort of go after it, you know. And so and that's what we've been doing.
All right. Well, that is all the time we have for today's show, but I want to thank my guests, Michael O'Hara Garcia, founder and president of the Florida Olive Council. Thanks for speaking with us today.
Thank you, John.
Also, thanks to Dr. Mercy Olmsted, researcher and professor of agriculture with the University of Florida's Horticultural Sciences Department. Thank you so much for your time as well.
Thank you, John. It was great.
There's more information on today's show, as well as an archive of past shows on our website, wgcu.org/Gulf Coast Live. To comment on anything you've heard on this or any edition of the program, send email to gulfcoastlive@wgcu.org. Thanks to my producers, Luke Martin and Richard Chinqui. This is WGCU, Fort Myers 90.1 FM, WMKO Marco 91.7 FM, NPR for Southwest Florida.